Welcome once more to the Big Red Bench, Sean Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, bringing you all the sporting updates from around the Rebel County and further afield. Of course, we can't look past Reese McClenaghan just after getting his well-deserved gold in the men's pommel horse final. Ireland currently sitting at 13th in the medal table, with Harrington's guaranteed medal to be added to that. And now we're going to start with something very special. As earlier today, I caught up with Tour de Munster founder Paul Sheridan to talk about the cycling tour and some of the absolutely fantastic work that did. Enjoy this one. I know I did. Right, the 24th Tour de Munster charity cycle is right around the corner once more, and the excitement is once again building as over 100 amateur cyclists are adding the finishing touches to their training preparations for this year's tour, and they're gearing up to take an epic 600-kilometre tour of Munster's roads across six of the counties from the 8th of August to the 11th, and the tour aims to raise vital funds for the Munster branches of Down Syndrome Ireland. I'm delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by founder Paul Sheridan. Paul, how are you?
Very well, Dan. Thank you very much for having us.
Of course, any time at all, any time at all. The tour itself, how did it come to be 24 years ago now at this stage?
I guess I fell into cycling fairly late in life. I was close to 30. Really enjoyed it, enjoyed the, particularly the team aspect. You know, you can be pretty good on a bike, but if you don't work with the people around you, drafting off them or pulling with them, then you don't get as far as fast. So I love that aspect of it. I also wanted to the sense of achievement to share that with other people. Not that I was a competitive cyclist, but I did feel that the greats like Sonia Sullivan and Sean Kelly, that sense that they have of raising their fists in victory, that other people should experience that in their lives. So I was trying to organise an event that would give people that, and then to do something for a good cause. So for many years, there was various causes. In 2010, DSI Munster branches asked us if we could help them, and they have been the beneficiary ever since.
Unbelievable. And what does it mean for DSI Down Syndrome Ireland?
It's their biggest fundraiser for all the Munster branches. There's many of the branches, when I first started working with them, and they couldn't dream about doing anything for their members because they had no money. Money is a big enabler in life, as we all know. They need speech and language therapy, occupational therapy, and lots of other things. They started to dream. And in Cork in particular, they came up with the idea of having a field of dreams out in Corraheen. The Cork Agricultural Society had a bit of surplus land, gave it to them, and they have built a state-of-the-art training facility for young adults with Down syndrome. They go to learn horticultural skills and barista skills and for catering. And they have an incredible success rate in terms of getting young adults with Down syndrome into employment, giving them some dignity, giving them some self-respect and a sense of purpose that really is vital. And it's a privilege to be part of that.
And have you seen that firsthand yourself, Paul, the brilliant work that they do?
Yes, in Cork, other counties. Clare now has a building which they're going to make into a training facility. Tipperary, they have a facility in Thurles. But the field of dreams, I've seen it evolve over the years. I've seen extra polytunnels going in, extra porta cabins going in, and loads more trainees graduating, young adults graduating with the skill set and going into the employment market. You know, I have friends who work in Bus Éireann, and they take on people from the field of dreams and say they are some of the best colleagues they've ever had, and the impact they have in the workplace is fantastic.
That's absolutely fantastic. And I suppose, how can people get involved if they want to help out financially?
They can go on iDonate and find Tour de Munster. We would be delighted to, or straight to DSI. They will be delighted to get donations. We'll set off in the Grand Parade next Thursday morning. We'll cycle through, as you said, all the counties over the 4 days. Anywhere we're encountered along the route, there will be bucket shakers. People can donate to us along the route. And next Sunday, we will be back into Cork City. We will be climbing Patrick's Hill at about 4:45 on Sunday, the 11th of August. If people could come out to cheer us, we'd be delighted. If they want to make donations then, we'd be delighted. And we have the added benefit of the Cork Butter Exchange Band, the Butterer, an institution in Cork, are going to be on the hill to play their best music for us.
Are you a Cork man yourself, Paul, that you're starting and ending it in the real capital?
No, I'm a blow-in. I'm a Limerick man. But I moved here in 1999. I have the privilege of marrying a Cork girl. And
That's it, so.
And three Cork children. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. Well, you couldn't have picked a more difficult ending to the Tour de Munster, climbing up Patrick's Hill in the bike.
Yeah, but it's also iconic. And it's, you know, it has been the scene of so many great battles in other cycling events. And we just want to pay homage to people who've done that. We have Sean Kelly with us. Sean is the second greatest cyclist of all time.
After yourself, and,
Eddie Max. You're too kind. Your own Jamie O'Hara will be with us, and he ranks way ahead of me as well in the rankings. So somewhere between Jamie and Sean, we have a few other people as well, and it's just fantastic. We have a few legends, and Sean in particular is just massive.
Yeah, I mean, what does he make of all? What a fantastic ambassador to have on board.
Yeah, he started with us in about 2006. At that stage, he couldn't do all 4 days because it was clashing with another Grand Tour, the Tour of Spain. So he would have to go away to be at that. But for the last, this will be his 19th year, I think. And he has done completed all 4 days for the last 16 or 17.
Fantastic stuff. Anybody else that we might know involved?
Well, Jamie, as I said, and Philip Cassidy, a two-time Ross winner, is back to join us after many years away. And Barry Meehan there's a website called stickybottle.com. Barry is very famous in cycling circles.
Are you the person who planned out the route, Paul? And can you take us through, I know you go through all counties, but what route are we looking at?
So on Thursday, we will leave Cork City at about 9 o'clock from the English Market. We'll be seen off by the mayor. We'll go to Middleton for a quick break in Middleton, then through Dungourney to Tallow. That's where we enter Waterford. Tallow up over the hill, down to Lismore. We will have another break. Leave Lismore, we go north up over the V, so that's the first big climb of the tour. And down into Cloheen, and we're in Tipperary at that stage, then through Kerr, Bantry, Tiptown, Limerick Junction, into Limerick City, where we'll have a reception in King John's Castle, then out to Killaloe. So it's about 185 kilometres the first day. The second day, we leave Killaloe early in the morning, cross the bridge, run in Clare, up to Tuam Graney, across to Ennis for a break, then down to the ferry at Kilimer, across to Tarbert, down to Listowel to Tralee for the overnight stop. And then on Saturday, it is the Queen Stage, as we call it. We leave Tralee early in the morning, out to past Castle Gregory, up over the Connor Pass. I think it's Ireland's highest mountain pass road. Down to Dingle for a bit of lunch, back around by Castlemaine and Milltown, and to Killarney for a break, which is down syndrome in Kerry. And then up over Mald's Gap, Ladies View, down to Kenmare for the overnight stop. And then on Sunday, we have the easier day where we leave Kenmare in the morning, up over the Caha Pass, back into the Rebel County, through Gugan Barra for a break, and through Macroom, Lasarda, into to the straight road. We meet the Gardaí. They give us an escort from the county hall. Onto Patrick's Bridge, where we break into various groups, with the contenders leading off at an interval, so we don't get in their way. Those guys really slug it out on the hills, looking to set record times and take the honours in front of a big public.
I don't think any of the days are easy anyway, Paul. Are you the person who mapped out the route, or how difficult of a process was that?
It evolved over a couple of years, and it continues to evolve. But it was a case of, okay, let's see all the counties, and let's try to do the most challenging bits in some of them. You know, Cyprus, we're looking for a challenge. If it was easy, I guess we'd stay at home. We'd probably want to stay at home. So it's not for the faint of heart, but it's entirely achievable to people who put in the training. And I run training sessions twice a week from April through to September. People invariably have plenty of opportunity to get ready. We have some amazing athletes who face incredible challenges to get to the start. One of my good friends was effectively paralysed in 2018 while out training on his bike. He now has a recumbent, so one of these bikes that you sit back into, and Conor O'Dea, he plans to come along and cycle all in all stages of this year's tour. So it's... And, you know, we all also realise that these are challenges that we're either voluntarily taking on. Parents of children with Down syndrome have challenges put before them every day that they didn't get a choice. And like any of us could have a child with Down syndrome. It's not hereditary or anything like that. It's just one chromosome splitting three ways rather than two. And it's a lottery. About 1 in 600 or 700 births in Ireland are with a baby with Down syndrome. And, you know, if you thought of Thomond Park being full on a match day, if nobody in the audience had, or in the supporters, had Down syndrome, then everybody on the pitch, all the players and the referee and the other officials would have it. And that's the kind of race you're talking about. And most people, none of these parents want to hand out. They simply want a hand up, you know, a little bit of help. And the Tour de Munster, I guess, gives that help. It gives financial help to build some stuff and to pay for some therapies that otherwise wouldn't be possible. And when you see the difference, like there's a little girl that I know up in Tipperary, Aoife Poyser. When she was first born, after a couple of years, the doctors told her mother and father that she would never speak. She learned sign language through Down syndrome Ireland Tipperary. And as a result of learning sign language, she saw that her brother seemed to get things quicker because he spoke and Aoife learned to speak. Mm-hmm. And when you see that fundamental difference that it can make in a person's life, where they go from being told that they'll never speak to being able to speak because of therapy that was essentially provided because of an event like the Tour de Munster, then... you know, your reason to carry on with it is absolutely, and the reason to support it is absolutely assured. It's nailed on.
That's fantastic, Paul. Has there been parents of children with Down syndrome who've taken part in the cycle with you before?
Yes. Amazingly, many parents took up cycling because they saw what the Tour de Munster was doing. One particular chap, Phil Cahan from Carrigaline, he stood at the top of Patrick's Hill when his little boy, Nate, was just after coming out of hospital. And he said to his wife, Amy, he said, look, there's 100 guys down there who have no personal connection. And yet they're doing this for Nate and others like him in the future. So he said, we're not alone. And from that, he decided to become a cyclist. And Phil did quite a few editions of the tour, and many other parents have done editions, and some have done as many as 10. This year, we still have a few parents, some who are in support roles, driving vans and things like that, others who are on their bicycles, and we'll enjoy them all.
Yeah, and I presume they can contact you as well if they want to help out in any way, volunteer-wise themselves, yeah?
For sure, Dan. Yeah, we all help gratefully received.
Absolutely. What's the toughest part of the tour, in your opinion?
The toughest part can be the weather, because it's the thing that's unpredictable. So if you end up cycling from Kerr to Limerick with the north wind blowing down on your nose, that can be tough, or if the rain comes or whatever. The toughest sections are by far up over the Conor Pass and up over Mald's Gap. But we train for those. And, you know, for some people, just sitting for that length of time in the saddle And, you know, you can be 7 or 8 hours in the saddle during the day. That can be tough and wearying. But, you know, again, it's voluntary. We chose to do this. We can't expect anyone to feel sorry for us.
I'm feeling sorry for you enough just hearing about that anyway.
No, I wouldn't want that. Pseudo cream is a great weapon anyway. So
we spoke about the toughest part. What's for you the highlight of the tour, I guess, cycling-wise, and then maybe outside it?
I suppose getting over the high passes is a highlight. Doing it as a collective is a highlight. But meeting the many parents and children, young adults with Down syndrome along the way is by far the biggest highlight. That personal connection and knowing that these people are there. Like I say to the cyclists constantly, they're not out here because they love cyclists. They're out here because they love someone with Down syndrome, and they know that you are doing something that will hopefully improve the lives of their loved one. So we meet those people, and, you know, children with Down syndrome, they talk about them having special needs, but they have a very special ability, and it's an ability to make the rest of us feel special. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing something very simple, raising a few euros for them, and we get so much love and affection or whatever, and you kind of think, God, I don't know, what did I do to deserve this? But you hope that you can justify it by returning as much as you can. So anything we can do to help make the total amount raised higher, that would be greatly appreciated.
If people want to take part as a cyclist themselves, how can they go about doing that?
They can email me on paul.sheridan08@gmail.com and I'll talk to them through the preparations and try to make sure that they're ready for it. You know, that we don't want anybody out there feeling that they failed. And thankfully, we don't often have that. So we try to make sure that everyone, you know, the old adage, if you fail to prepare, then prepare to fail. We try to make sure that people do not fail to prepare, and as a result, they're successful, at least in realising their own ambition.
Well, Paul, the work you're doing is absolutely fantastic. It's very, very remarkable. So if people want to help out and donate to the tour in aid of Down Syndrome Ireland, just remind us how they can do that once more.
They can do it on iDonate, the platform, and find TDM. So iDonate/TDM. They will find it there, or they can go to www.tourdemonster.com or to DSI itself. And they can even pop out to DSI in Corraheen here. DSI Cork will be delighted to receive any donation or support that they can get.
Perfect stuff, and hopefully there'll be plenty of support, and I'm sure there will, and the Grand Parade on Thursday and Patrick's Hill Sunday morning. Or so what time Sunday will you be heading home?
Sunday afternoon we'll be on the hill at 4:45.
Brilliant stuff. Paul Sheridan from Tour de Munster, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you very much, Dan, to you and all your listeners.
Brilliant stuff from Paul there. Now, during the week I caught up with Budweiser ambassador Joey Carberry. He was speaking to me on Sports Show for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin on August 24th. Here's our conversation. Enjoy.
Joey, how are you keeping anyway?
Good, how are you keeping?
Not too bad. How's the French lessons going?
Not great, I'll be honest. I'm trying, but I suppose everyone has said to me, you need to be practicing it every day and kind of almost thinking in it in French. So I reckon it'll maybe take a couple months on the other side when I get over, when I have to use it every day. But I'm trying to do a bit, so I hopefully have a bit of a base level going over.
Yeah, do you have like a grinds teacher, or are you using old Duolingo or something?
I had a grinds teacher, did a few lessons with her, and then did a bit of Duolingo. I didn't like Duolingo as much, and then I actually found I think it's called 3 Minute French on Spotify. It's just like loads of lessons on that, and I actually got a lot more out of that than the other two. So whenever I'm in the car, I'll just chuck it on and see what I can learn.
Well, what are you most looking forward to about playing your rugby in France?
I'm looking forward to playing with the Bordeaux team. I just think that the players they have, the way they play, I have a really good feeling that it will really suit the way I play and the way I think. And then Noel McNamara being there as well is huge for me. Obviously, the attacking backs coach being English speaking, and then having worked with him before as well is huge for me. So, I'm actually just really excited. I've never been this excited going into a season before. So, I can't wait to just get over there and get into it.
Where is that excitement really stemming from?
I just think it's the fact that it's a new challenge, a new start for me, with a new team. And then my body's feeling good going into the game, going into the season injury free. And then I think it's a combination of everything really. And then just even the weight off my shoulders of just going over there and starting fresh is huge. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Are you more relaxed now, you'd say, in your personal space?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think since the decision has been made back in December, January, it's been a huge weight off my shoulders. I suppose for me, playing for Ireland has always been my number one goal. And I suppose when I wasn't playing for Ireland, it was really tough. And then it was hard then to go out and train and go out and play games. So since that decision's been made, it's kind of almost like it's out of my hands. Right now, I'm just going up to a fresh start. And yeah, I think that's been the biggest thing for me.
Did you feel your rugby maybe might have improved when the kind of shackles are off and you're like, I have nothing to lose now?
I think so. I think it's purely just a confidence thing when you're not getting picked and then things going through your head and you're starting to question yourself because you're like, look, I don't think I'm a bad rugby player, but why am I not getting picked? So that all kind of goes through your head. And I think the way Bordeaux were so interested and invested in me, I think gave me a bit of a boost as well. I'm hoping to go over there and show exactly what I'm about.
I'm sure leaving the provincial setup in Ireland wasn't an easy decision for you. How did you kind of weigh up the pros and cons of making that move and how tough ultimately was it?
Yeah, it was a tough decision-making process, I must say. But I think the best bit of advice I've ever got was from Stuart Lancaster when I was leaving Leinster. And he just said, make sure you have every card you have on the table and then make a decision from that. So I tried to, I suppose, take in everything that happened in Munster, happened in Ireland, what could happen if I went to France. And I think having this fresh start to play in a team as good as Bordeaux, I think it was too good to pass by on. And obviously it was very tough to leave Munster because a lot of the guys who I'd play with week day in, day out would be real good friends of mine. And I suppose playing for Ireland has always been my number one goal. And who knows if I'm still playing with Ireland, it might not have worked out this way, but I think just how difficult it was for me not being involved throughout the World Cup and then the Six Nations, it was, that had a lot to say for it.
I know you talked to Andy. What did those conversations look like?
I won't go into too much detail, but it was very honest and it was very, like, there was no bad blood at all. It was all, like, I think he completely understood where I was coming from. I think from a personal level, he knew how tough it had been for me. So I think he respected that and he wished me well. And look, like I said to him, I'm only 28. My contract's up, I'll still only be 30. So hopefully I can put my hand up and see what happens. But then as well, I might not even come back either. So my head's just focused on the next year, next few weeks, getting stuck in and seeing what happens, really.
Yeah, and how tough is it mentally? I mean, you're saying to play for Ireland is your dream and you're not getting picked and you're seeing the squads go off and doing everything that they're doing. That must be incredibly taxing mentally.
It is tough, and I suppose I've been in, up until last year, I've been in most Six Nations squads since I was about 20, 21. So for that to kind of change quite rapidly and quickly, it was really tough because, like you said, you see them going out and they're doing so well, and all you want to do is be part of it. So, that was really tough. Just to kind of, it almost just felt like you weren't an international anymore. And I wasn't playing for the international, so I wasn't, but just felt like I was, it was very tough.
do you think your maybe talents were overlooked a small bit while you were playing here?
I don't know. I think there was probably a disagreement regarding maybe just opinions. I'm a better player than the way I was treated, especially down in Munster. But look, I think that's the tough thing about rugby. There's so many different interpretations and opinions, and one coach sees it one way, another coach sees it a different way, or a player sees it differently. So that's why I think going over, I've worked with Noel before, and I know the way he sees the game, and I think it's quite similar to the way I like it. So, and then even way the team plays, it's quite open, which I think will suit me. So I'm really looking forward to that.
How do you think Bordeaux will suit your game?
I think, like I just said, I think they've got incredible players all over the park, and I think sometimes they're just like, look, give the ball to someone like Penno. He's an incredible player. Just if he's one-on-one, two-on-one, give him the ball and see what happens and go from there. I don't think it's going to be as structured as over here, so I'm not really looking forward to that. And just watching the games, it's just so exciting, and it looks like it's real fun to play in, so I can't wait for that.
Well, look, to add it all into the mix, Super Baby Boy, you know, how has that changed things for you?
it's incredible. I've been quite lucky. He came literally the week after I broke my thumb, so I haven't been actually training that much. I've been able to be around, which is incredible. Tough work, and I don't think anyone can tell you and prepare you for that as much as it is, but he's great. And we've been so lucky that I've had this time off with him, because had he been born mid-season, I reckon I would have been back training pretty quick after. So to be able to spend all this time with him, like, it's so special.
Did Robin tell you to break your own thumb so you could get the time off and help out?
I'm sure she wasn't complaining, that's for sure. But no, yeah, the way it works, it's funny how things work, but even just having the last probably 5 or 6 weeks, just the three of us, has been really cool.
Yeah, has it changed your outlook towards life in general, and then the rugby aspect to go with that?
Completely. Like, I think before I would have just been playing for myself and for Robin and obviously my parents and everything, but now I'm like, there's a whole other element to it now. So yeah, it's crazy how it changes your whole perspective on everything. It kind of puts everything into context. Like, some things aren't as important as you thought they were. And then he comes along and you're like, look, this is my main goal now, my main focus.
Did that move from Leinster to Munster a few years back help you prepare for the upcoming move to France?
I think so. I think it's always a tough to come into a new environment. I think as well, because in a lot of teams that I've been involved with, everyone's kind of quite comfortable. So it's hard to come in and kind of settle and fit in straight away. But it only takes a couple of days, a week or so, and I'm looking forward to getting to know everyone. And then it does get you do feel comfortable very quickly. And I think you spend so much time with people that you get to know them really quickly as well. Like, you spend most days with them, and then you're training and you're on the pitch, and rugby's great for that. You get to know people quite quickly. So no, I think that definitely helped me with the transition.
Well, what would stick out to you as a highlight of playing provincials in Ireland and then as an international?
With Leinster, definitely was winning the Champions Cup in the Pro 14. And then with Munster, it was, I suppose, my first few years down there, it was really exciting, and I felt like I was playing some of my best rugby. I really enjoyed that. And we obviously won something last year, but we didn't win anything straight away, which was quite disappointing. But yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed my time here, and it's a lot to be said for when you can go into work every day and you get to play with your best friends. I think that was a big thing for me to say. That was quite hard for me to say goodbye to. But I'll make new friends. I'm sure I'll become close, real close, with the Bordeaux guys, and I'm looking forward to opening that door.
What do you make of Ireland's international side at the moment? Do you think they're the number one team in the world?
I think they're definitely thereabouts. It's hard to put, because I think rugby, unfortunately, it's just the best team on the day that wins the game sometimes. They might not necessarily be the best team, but they'll win on the day because they're the best team. So I think the potential there is incredible, like the players they have. And I think even like someone like Caelan there, Caelan Doras, I think he's world class, and I think there's world class players all over that, like Hugo and Gary and all the likes. So I think they have the backbone of such a strong team going forward with a lot of experience already, and a lot of them still being quite young. So I think there's huge potential there.
Yeah. And do you think this side needs to do to break through that glass ceiling of that quarterfinal?
I just think they've been quite unlucky. Like, I think, like I said, rugby sometimes is one team might be at 100, one team might be at 95, and it's the team at 100 that wins. And I think the All Blacks team on that quarterfinal in the last World Cup just had one of those days that everything went their way and they were played out of their skin. And like, I don't think Ireland did a huge amount wrong. It was just one or two, like, rugby can come down to 1 5-second, two centimetre decision or bounce of a ball. So I just think they can't lose confidence in themselves and the way they're playing, because they play such a good brand of rugby and they've shown it works. So they just need to keep backing it, keep working and improving on it.
Hope it's not too close to the bone, but who do you think should the Ireland's 10 be going forward for the next 2 years?
Tricky one. I don't know. I think obviously Kieran Frawley did that two incredible drop goals, and I think he did quite well when he came on. Jack's been playing really well all season as well, so I think it'll be down to those two, really. I'm not sure who will take it, but I think Ireland have two good options in them.
If you're talking to any lads on the squad, what's that very quickly growing rivalry between South African and New Zealand boys like for them?
Yeah, I think the media is kind of hyped that up a lot, because obviously RG was down in Munster, so he would have been one of our good friends, so there wouldn't have been that rivalry there. I think it's a lot of the media and that rivalry, but I think that kind of comes part and parcel as well, that when you're the two best teams in the world, almost, and then you throw the All Blacks into there, like, I think there's always going to be bragging rights. Like, we won this one, you won this one, we got the better over these guys here, you did it, or whatever. So it's definitely building, but I think it's purely just because both teams just want to be the best versions of themselves and to go out and to be the best team they can be. But I do think it's pretty hard not to knock South Africa winning back-to-back World Cups. Like, is there it's not much question there.
What will you miss about most? But I think I might know your answer. What will you miss most about playing in rugby here? Surely some of the lads anyway.
Yeah, definitely. That was, I think, the conversations I had with different people looking for advice was, that was always my go-to back. Being like, look, if I leave the provincial setup here, then I'm leaving some of my best friends. But I think I'm close enough with a good few of them that we'll stay in contact regardless. Whenever I come home, or they might come out to me, we'll catch up. But that will be tough. But like I said earlier, I think although a few people have said to me involved in the organisation have said it's almost like a family. So they get real close and they spend down days together. They go into training, hang out after training. So I'm looking forward to getting a taste of that and seeing what happens there.
Who are your best friends in the Irish provincial sides and international?
I'd have a lot. Like, I'd be very close with Jeremy, Jack O'Donoghue, Pete, Mer. In Munster, it's sad. There could be 20 people there. Like, even at the moment, it's wedding season, and it's cool because we get to go to, like, it's just the same group of fellas we stick together with. So, look, it's that's a tough thing. But like I said, I'm still in all the WhatsApp groups with them outside of rugby, and I'm sure we'll get a few golf trips organised here or there. So it'll still be a bit of fun.
That's it for me question wise but look, before you go, do you have any good stories or anything you can share with us, if they're reasonably PG anyway, over your time playing rugby here?
Good stories, Jesus. Not off the top of my head. If you give me a bit of a template, maybe I can give you something on it. But no, not off the top of my head, no. But I suppose to sum it up, like, I've adored my time here, and like I said, playing for Ireland has always been my dream. So I get to get 37 caps, and I it's such a privilege, and then to meet the guys and play with the guys who I've gone through, and even some of the coaches, like, I've worked with, like, I still have a good relationship with a few of them, and to be able to have relationships with people, whether they're players, coaches, staff, whatever, I think that says a lot about the places, because like rugby's quite fickle, players come and go every season, and but to have that relationship then after says a lot, I think, about the place as an organisation to create those relationships. So I've loved my time. Hopefully people have loved me being involved, and look, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the future.
And best of luck, Joey Carberry. What a legend. Thanks so much for speaking to me. Appreciate it, mate.
Cheers. Thank you.
Brilliant stuff from Joey. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Good Times Red FM with me, Dan Casey. Come back to us in the second half of the show, where I'll be chatting to Matthew Hurley about the Cork Club Hurling Championship. Small bit of a inter-county wrap-up, as well as looking at the All-Ireland Camogie Final. Do not go anywhere. Welcome back to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey with you at this stage, only for the next 20 minutes or so. Earlier today, I caught up with Matthew Hurley, also known as the Gaelic Statsman, to have a look at the Cork Club Hurling Championship, as well as some inter-county talk, including, of course, the Camogie All-Ireland Final next Sunday. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench once again by Matthew Hurley, more commonly probably at this stage known as the Gaelic Statsman. Matthew, just like that, Cork's inter-county season has come to a close. But we'll speak of that one first, actually. Just what a season the Cork Hurlers gave this county. It was absolutely incredible.
It was, yeah, and I suppose it was one of the best seasons that the Cork Hurlers have had I would say since when you think about it, 05, when you think, I know they won the All-Ireland 05 and you won't want to go back that far, but 2013, they were kind of lucky to reach the All-Ireland final. 2021, got hammered up the gate by Limerick in the final. This year, while it was disappointing in the final to lose it by a point in the end, you should be very proud of the players. Like, the players performed brilliantly. It was almost like they couldn't do any more but win the All-Ireland. They were just the better team on the day, just slightly so, but it was just so sad that they didn't get over the line in the end. But look, I think there is an All-Ireland in this Cork team in the next 2 or 3 years. Like, they just have to wait now. The real question is, will Patrick Arkin get that Celtic cross? We all hope he will, but we'll have to see now in the next year. But I'm pretty sure that this Cork team will win one, if not two, All-Irelands in the next 5 years.
I'd certainly take the one anyway. Take the one and be happy. It's been a long time coming, but yeah, you're right. Oh, very unfortunate not to get over the line in the end, but we had some huge days, like the Parky Cave game. Like, that was just... I know a lot of Limerick fans give a stick saying, oh, that was like your All-Ireland. But in a way, it was. Just the day and the event was just unbelievable for Hoggy to stick the penalty in the last minute, to then go to tip and outnumber them, geez, what felt like 5 or 6 to 1 in their own backyard. Then to go on to Limerick and beat them in the semi-final, like the greatest team of all time, in my opinion, and stop the drive for 5. Oh, just what a year. Is there any highlight for you?
Yeah, I think one moment in the Limerick game in the semi-final, I was at the game, and there was the moment, I think Garrett Hagerty's shot was saved by Patrick Collins. There was Mark Coleman and Owen Downey getting the ball out of the fence, going out the other end. Declan Dalton gets the ball in the halfway line, pokes it over the bar. I felt Crow Park shake that day, Dan, to be honest with you, and it was just an incredible moment. It just signaled, probably the Parky Cave game in Limerick against Limerick, signaled that Cork were back. They were there to be contained with All-Ireland's titles. And I suppose there was that sort of thing at the last day of the Munster Championship. If Limerick drew against Water, they would have knocked out Cork. Would they have been better doing that? We never know, obviously. But look, it was just a brilliant year. To beat Limerick not once but twice was absolutely incredible. And I'd agree with you wholeheartedly. This Limerick team was one of the greatest of all time, in my opinion. When you go from spade to spade with the Kilkenny team in the 2000s and the Limerick team now, I think the Limerick team was probably trumps them. And to beat them twice in 1 year in championship hurling, it was absolutely incredible. And being so close in the final against Clare, look, the players did absolutely brilliantly. But that Declan Dalton point, I think that was the best moment that I felt as a Cork GAA fan since Donal O'Connor stuck that penalty away against Dublin in 2010 in the football. That was just an incredible moment. And it just seemed that, as I mentioned before, Cork are back and to be feared next season.
Well, geez, I think the Hoggy penalty was the best moment in my life. Don't mind even Cork GA. what a moment. And yeah, look, huge credit goes to that Cork team. And I suppose, Matthew, with this team, like age profile wise, they're coming together. I know you might have Harnedy and Hoggy coming towards the end of their careers. We don't know when they'll end yet. Hopefully they'll both stay on for another year, and then we'll throw, of course, Conor Lehan, an absolute workhorse, into that conversation as well. But you have the likes now, Alan Connolly, Brian Hayes, who've certainly announced themselves. And look, it's good to say it now, or it's easy to say it now, but I do believe there is an All-Ireland in this team, especially with the age range as well. They're coming now.
Exactly so, and I suppose there is other young players coming through the ranks as well, like Ben Cunningham, who played last night for the Bars, is a very good young player coming through. Michael Mullins is another excellent midfielder coming through the ranks as well, and there is bound to be more young Cork talents coming through the ranks as well. There are some very good players in the club championship, which we'll talk about in a bit there, like Bobby Cotter from Blackrock. I think is an excellent player and definitely a sharp shooter, and the way him and Alan Connolly connected for Blackrock last night was very, very impressive, and maybe something that Cork could bring in. Brian Hayes, again, for the Bars, was excellent last night. He had other players stepping up to the mantle. Like Shane Barrett was absolutely excellent this season, probably had his best season in a Cork shirt. Declan Dalton stepped up to the ranks as well. Jack O'Connor from Sarras is an excellent player, Connor forward. You have other players coming in around the midfield area as well. Like Tim O'Mahony had a very good All-Ireland final. Darragh Fitzgibbon, still young enough, and arguably, to many people's eyes, a player of the season nominee as well. Mark Coleman had a very good season. We found a fullback in Owen Downey, who was absolutely superb. Pat Collins did well in goal. Like Sean O'Donoghue, colossal as ever in the full back line. Rob Downey, very good at centre back. The main question about the back line is, where would you put Kieran Joyce now? Because Kieran Joyce was a nailed on number six for Cork, but now Rob Downey's done so well, where do you put Kieran then? Do you put him at wing back? Do you put him in midfield? And then that adds to the competition, and Pat Ryan deserves a lot of credit for that, for bringing these young players through, for adding to the competition there. And even like Ben Cunningham, we find it hard to get into the team next season, because Hoggy played well this season, Kingston has done well off the bench this season, Shane Barrett has done well. So like, there's a lot of competition for places, and I suppose that is the most impressive thing about Cork hurling moving into the new year.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit about the club championship round, and we'll talk a bit about Ben Cunningham. He scored 10 points, albeit 9 from the frees in Finn Bars versus Rocky clash last night. The Bars losing out by 1 point on a score in 217 to 315. Matthew, what was the winning and losing of this game here?
I think maybe for Blackrock, they did very well in the first half. They started off like a train, Robbie Cotter getting that goal early on in the match after 8 minutes, and then the second goal, the Bars seemed to do well in the defence, but Alan Connolly nipped in and scored that goal. I think the Bars, or the Rocky, Blackrock were ahead by the two goals really at halftime from Connolly and Cotter, but the Bars came back into the game, to be fair to them, in the second half. Brian Hayes scoring the first goal after excellent work from Ben Cunningham setting up the goal, and then a cracker of a goal from Sam Cunningham after that. Jack Callan and Brian Hayes providing a good assist to the goal as well. Brian Hayes making the run, he was fouled in the build up, passing it on to Jack Callan passing to Sam Cunningham back in the net, and it looked like in this game it was going to head towards a draw, but then Blackrock found a line of space in front of them, and Alan Connolly deserves a lot of credit for this, finding space up in the forward line, soling the ball, passing off to Robbie Cotter, making the right option back in the net, and Blackrock win the game. The Bars nearly pulled it back towards the end of the game, in fairness to them. Like Ben Cunningham got out over a couple of frees, and we thought the Bars would win it, their last puck out, and get a draw out of the game, but the Rockies definitely deserve a lot of credit for holding out the game till the very end. But to be honest, Dan, I think these two teams will be thereabouts come the end of the championship. Both these teams are Fodder and Ease and Newstown in their group. You'd imagine both will beat their respective teams in the next two games. So yeah, I don't think the championship is over by long shot for the Bars. They still showed a lot of quality last night. Maybe a bit of rustiness in the first half cost them, but Blackrock looked very, very good last night, and definitely a team to watch. And definitely that forward line, including Robbie Cotter and Alan Connolly, are definitely ones to be watched in this championship.
It did seem to be a case of the big names from the Cork panel really stepped up. I know, I'm sure they're out, well, I won't say celebrating, but enjoying themselves after the tough season they put in the All-Ireland campaign in Intercounty with Cork. But like Ben Cunningham with 10 points, Brian Hayes 1-1, Sam with his goal, Ethan Toomey with 2 points, like Alan with 1-5 and Robbie Carter with 2-2. It was those big name players who did seem to step up.
Definitely so, and definitely another guy that really stepped up for Blackrock last night was their wing back Niall Cashman. He was on the Cork team a couple of years ago, and he was really, really good last night. Scored 2 early points, was very good in the defensive line, and I thought he was absolutely excellent as well. Robbie Cotter is a player that I've looked at for so many years in the club championship, and I just wonder, how is he not really on the Cork panel? Because he has been in and around the Cork panel over the last few seasons, but this guy is a pocket rocket, a corner forward, and definitely has an eye for goals. So he's a very, very good player when he gets going. Connolly, like, once he sees the back of the net, he's going to go for it, and he was absolutely excellent in this game. I wouldn't be shocked if the likes of Ben Cunningham, Alan Connolly would be up at the top of the top scorer charts coming the end of this Cork championship. Like, they are absolutely incredible players. Brian Hayes at full forward definitely worked for St. Finbar's last night. Jack Hallan deserves a lot of credit as well. Like, he was buzzing around the Blackrock full back line. He was causing problems there. He deserves a lot of credit for that. I know he was on the Cork football panel this year, but he's definitely a very, very good hurler. Ethan Toomey did well at midfield last night for the Bars, and then you've other players in and around the midline for the Bars as well. Damien Callan, centre back, had a good enough game last night. So it was the main players that stepped up. But like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Robbie Cotter in the Cork team in the league next season, Dan, if I'm all honesty, because he is a very, very good player and definitely one to take a look at in the championship this season.
I'm just going through some of the other results here. Glen Rovers 3-19, Killa 15 points. Like, I mean, this was without Patrick Horgan, of course. The Glen will be seriously, seriously hard to stop this year.
Yeah, exactly. And the most impressive thing about this performance was Patrick Horgan wasn't even there for the Glen last night, and they absolutely pummeled Killa. Apparently, Killa had a few injury problems, according to the Cork media. Last night, listening to Rebels Online, listening to Patrick Mulcahy, according to him, they had a few injury problems there. But look, the Glen only had to beat what's in front of them, and that was an incredible performance last night. Simon Kennefic got 1-2, Luke Horgan got a goal as well, Dean Brosnan 4 points from play, Owen O'Leary 3 points from play. You just have the feeling, Dan, that Glen are too good for this level. If they get going, it's going to be hard to stop them. Like, you have Rob Downey there, you have Owen Downey in the defensive line. They are going to be difficult to stop on their day in this championship. And once hockey comes back to the team, I think the Glen will be favourites for this championship. Like, Blarney will be up there, obviously. Bride Rovers will be up there. Possibly Castle Lions as well. But the Glen looks serious, and I think they will probably win this Senior A championship, and they might even go straight back up to the Premier Senior. But look, they have to keep their feet on the ground. It was a good win last night, but they have to carry on that momentum into the rest of the championship. And I think if they keep their levels going, I think the Glen will be very, very hard to stop in this championship.
Yeah, is there any other standout results from some of the games last night? A local derby there, Castle Lions beaten Fermoy 2-17 to 16 points. Just going through a few results here. Anything else that maybe stood out to you?
In the Premier Senior last night, Kanturk beating Erin Zone 118 to 114. That was a big result for them, because Kanturk were in the relegation playoff against Glen Rovers last season. And that was a good start for them. Blowing Mallow, that was a very good win for them. Erin Zone, like, a look at Erin Zone's next two games. They have Middleton and they have Charleville in no particular order. Like, that's going to be two difficult games. Charleville got to the league final in Division 1 this season and did very well across the league campaign without Dara Fitzgibbon in their team, by the way. And Middleton, finalist last season, losing that final narrowly, won the championship in 2021. So I would worry for Erin Zone going into the next two games, in all honesty. And that is a traditional club in the Cork Premier Senior Hurling Championship. Could we see another traditional club go down again in the Senior A Championship? So, like, that would be definitely one to watch in future months. Obviously, Castle Lions, a big win over Fermoy last night. That was a statement of intent after getting to the intermediate All-Ireland final last night. But there was very few games last night to look at, in all honesty. But the Bars of Blackrock was the main one. And Cantor's win over Erin Zone probably raised a few eyebrows, considering the season that Cantor had last season and how well Erin Zone have done over the past few seasons. But now, like, relegation could be a serious possibility for Erin Zone if they don't improve in their performances in the next few weeks.
And yeah, that was yesterday. Looking at today, we have some nice clashes as well. Bishopstown versus Newtown Shandrum. That's taking place in Fermoy. Middleton versus Charleville. I suppose a big one here, and I know you probably can't say much about it. You're involved with Sarahs, but Sarahs versus Douglas in Parky Ring. That one should be an absolute cracker.
It should be, yeah. You're lucky enough to be on the backroom team of Sarahs this season, and yeah, looking forward to the challenge, obviously. It should be a good game, probably for the neutral as well. Some good players on show, and it is live on Rebels Online as well tonight if anybody's out and about and watching the game. So yeah, it should be a good game tonight. Newtown Chandra against Bishopstown is an interesting one. Like, Tim O'Mahony will be in action, I'd imagine, for Newtown Chandra below and for my tonight. Bishopstown have some decent players, but like, they only beat the Glen last season to avoid a relegation playoff, so it'll be interesting to see how they go after this game. Middleton against Charleville, I'll actually be very interested in this in Moore Abbey at 7:30 this evening. Middleton were the finalists last season, still have the likes of Conor Leahan, Cormac Bosan, Luke O'Farrell around the panel, so they'll be interesting, an interesting team to see in this championship. Charleville obviously got to the league final without Dara Fitzgibbon in the team. Well, Dara's back now tonight, so I'd imagine Charleville will definitely possibly could be a dark horse in this Cork Championship, so that'd be definitely one to watch as well. And even tomorrow, like Newstown against Father O'Neill's, I'd imagine like that's the Rockies and the Barrows group. So like, I'd imagine the loser of that is in relegation trouble, in my honest opinion, Dan. So that'll be definitely one to watch tomorrow in Carrigaline at 1:30 as well. So yeah, some interesting games in the Premier Senior Championship.
Yeah, and even Senior A, Blarney, Carrick 2 later on. Well, it'll be underway by the time this is going out, and then Bright Rovers facing Cloyne as well in what should be another cracker. You're watching on Rebels Online. A lot of Cork fans do seem to actually like the service, and does seem to be well reciprocated, or well appreciated, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's absolutely brilliant service. Like in football last week, you had St. Finbarr's against Douglas, very good game. Blowing Carrigaline last week, and they deserve a lot of credit, Rebels Online, for showing these Cork public. Like, I even think back before COVID, Dan, lots of these Cork Championship games wouldn't have been streamed. I don't think they would have anyway, unless they were streamed live on TV and TG Car. So once COVID started, then the Irish Examiner started streaming these live games, then Rebels Online came into the fray in 2023. And I think it's been a brilliant service, in all honesty, Dan. I think it's a brilliant service. It's brilliant cost as well. I think it's 40 games in around that number, €80 for the whole year. So that's €2 per game, which is a very good value. I have to say, it's an excellent value of the service. Some brilliant commentators there, Liam Mahorn and Patrick Mulcahy. Some excellent analysts there as well on the service. So they deserve a lot of credit. Cork GAA deserves a lot of credit for bringing this in last season. And yeah, long may it continue. And it's brilliant just up and down the country, Dan, that we're seeing these club streaming services stream the club championships all around the country. And it's great that we see this service, because in a season where the Premier League could take precedence, the Olympics, rugby coverage and stuff like that, isn't it great that we've seen club championships being streamed live and everybody to watch it? It's absolutely brilliant service for anybody that can't even make it to the games and have to stay at home. So it's just a brilliant service, and yeah, long may it continue.
Yeah, COVID did have its, I guess, perks in some regards, I suppose, ultimately. Big Camogie final next weekend. We'll talk about that, if you don't mind, for 2 seconds. Huge clash for between Cork and Galway here. What way do you see this one going?
The stats would actually indicate that Cork would definitely have the upper hand on Galway in this championship. And considering the last meeting between the sides, it was 2-16-1-7 below Parky Keeve, and that was an absolute hammering in favour of Cork. Like, Amy O'Connor was hitting form against Dublin the last day. Like, Katrina Mackey was very good before the Dublin game in this championship. She only scored, I think, a point, if that, in the semi-final, but she's been very good throughout the championship. Saoirse McCarthy scored 1-2 in the semi-final and was really, really impressive. So McCartan scored a goal off the bench as well. Orla Callahan scored 2 goals in the semi-final. So I'd imagine the Cork forwards are absolutely on fire this championship campaign. Clodagh Finn off the bench as well. And that's another thing. Like, Cork, in my opinion, have a stronger bench than Galway going into next week. Like, Galway have lost a lot of older players in this panel. Like, Sarah Dorvin's not in the panel this season. Sean O'Healy is not in the panel. Emma Hillibert and Siobhan Gardner are both injured. then you have in the car panel, you still have Saoirse McCartan to bring on, you still have Clodagh Finn to bring on, you still have a bunch of others to bring on off the bench as well. And look, this is a very good bench from Cork, and Joe Randy and Matthew Toomey last season, to be fair, and deserve a lot of credit for building this panel to a high level. I feel like Cork will have enough to win this game, in all honesty, but it is a final. Anything can happen. We've seen in the hurling, Cork were probably the favourites going into the final against Clare. Look what happened there. So I think the Cork and Bogey team have to stay grounded, get the job done next weekend. But I'd imagine Cork will be massive favourites going into the game. But look, it's a new game, new challenge. They'll have to figure out that. But look, it's going to be a big game. And to win two in a row, if Cork are to do that, will be a massive achievement for Joe Manley, who did take over Matthew Toomey really well at the start of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, just the likes of a Saoirse McCartan there, is she putting the hand up for a starting place now? I mean, there's a few headaches for Germani there. Certainly not too straightforward into his starting 15.
It isn't really, no. Like, at the same time, though, Orla Callahan definitely deserves her start in the team. Amy O'Connor is a guaranteed starter. Katrina Mackey probably is as well because of her running game. Saoirse McCarthy is doing well in around that middle third as well. So, like, could you drop any of them, Dan? Yeah. That's the thing. And it's Saoirse McCarthy. What you have there, if you have her on the bench, is a player to come on if things are going wrong in the first half and early on in the second half. You have a player to come on to snap the fingers and make things happen when things are going wrong for the team. So I think that is actually an advantage to Cork to have a player like her on the bench, and Clodagh Finn, who has scored well in this championship as well. So I think it's actually an advantage for Cork to have Saoirse McCartan on the bench. And there is starters there that definitely deserve their place in the team. The likes of Fiona Keating, Orla Callahan, Saoirse McCarthy, Katrina Mackey, they deserve their starting spot. So I think it's a good thing that Cork have Saoirse McCartan on the bench, just to have that extra option to come in off the bench. You've seen it with the hurlers over the last few weeks. Shane Kingston was a brilliant option to come off the bench. Saoirse McCartan's very, a very similar player to Shane Kingston, and the difference that she does make when she comes onto the pitch.